welcome along to the roundtable after a rather quite an uneventful weekend in the National Basketball League. Julia Marcus with you. Matt McQuaid, as always, riding shotgun with me. Matty, I like how peaceful and just, you know, sometimes uneventful it is most weekends in the NBL, especially this one. Not much to talk about tonight. This might be a 10-minute episode.
It might be very little, Julian. It's it's quiet, and what is there to discuss? I mean, really, it's going along swimmingly. Everybody's kept their jobs, and you know, players are doing all of them are doing the right thing, and you know, how do we get, you know, some content out of it all? Of course, we're kidding. Before anybody jumps up and down, look, hello, Julian. Hello, listeners. It's the NBL, man. I mean, yeah. It always brings something up. But I think this week more so than others because of what occurred. In some ways, not a surprise. In other ways, a huge shock because of the timing of it. So, and then the on-court games were great as well. Couple of surprises, couple of blowouts, maybe a team that has potentially elevated itself above everybody else, maybe bar one other team. So it was a great round, and we've got a lot to discuss, and we've got a great special guest tonight or today to discuss it with.
Today, tonight, again, you could be anywhere where you're listening to it. We are worldwide, and thank you so much to everybody that has subscribed to the podcast, that tunes in and week out. We absolutely love you guys, and it makes it worthwhile doing this, although to be honest with you, I think we'd probably just have these conversations even if there wasn't a microphone anywhere nearby. The man that we've got tonight, today, this afternoon, about 5 years ago, nearly 5 years ago, we did a historic, it was around the time of the COVID lockdowns, right. And we did we were going to do a historical series, and we actually did, and you can find it on the old archives as well. We were doing the historical roundtables, going through the history of the NBL. We did the 1980s with our good friend Boddy Nodge, and of course, the great man Cal Bruton, retire 55. And then we did part one of the 1990s with this man, and we never got around to part two.
Yeah,
we still haven't got around to part two. It's been 4.5 years.
So, about that.
So, not my words, at some point in the next 12 months, we're going to go through 1996 to 1999. But tonight, tomorrow, today, we're going to go through the last 7 days of NBL action because there's enough to fill an episode with that. And this man's been around the game for a long, long time. A fantastic mind as far as the game is concerned. Speaking of Mookie Shirelli, welcome back to the roundtable. It's been too long.
Well, good morning, good evening, guys. How are you? And it is fantastic to be back. And as you say, you've just reinforced my age there, which is fantastic, and my creaky knees, which can feel every eke of pain walking up and down the stairs in basketball stadiums like the Qdos Bank Arena. But it's great to be here again. And as you say, it's been a very quiet time to start the NBL season, hasn't it?
I've missed this so much. I really have missed this so much because an endless trail of storylines that is going on around the league. No matter where you look in the standings, there's so many different stories. The Hawks, magnificent. Melbourne yesterday, reminding us what they're capable of. Adelaide had a big win on Friday, gave a bit back yesterday. The Brisbane Bullets, The Perth Wildcats, that was better. Tasmania, they're in a bit of trouble. And then, of course, the headline act in this episode, the Southeast Melbourne Phoenix. It is the league that keeps on giving.
And you didn't even mention the Sydney Kings. I mean, people would be, what is going on here?
They've had a quiet week, haven't they?
No Kings, they had a quiet weekend as well. It's the nature of the league, isn't it? It brings these stories up every year without fail. And it's quite remarkable. It's why we love it. And it's why we're passionate about talking about it because, you know, it's a great content generator. And I guess it's something that Larry Kesterman, it's what he wants. You know, he wants people talking about the league, obviously. But he wants these storylines. You know, I've said this before that the commentators are told they have to be storytellers. And, you know, part of that is, you know, what occurs on the court and also off the court, as we've seen so many times. And, Yeah, it's been quite remarkable, and really, I guess it came to a head so early, you know, as you spoke about with the Phoenix, and we'll get onto them in a minute. But yeah, I mean that's what it is all about. It's just the great stories this competition continues to provide us.
Mickey, what's been your big takeaway of the first four rounds of this competition? It's just been a cavalcade of stories.
It has, and I think, as you say, I think back to those years during the NBL, some of the darker days where the NBL would artificially inflate stories and create things, or wait on Brian Goorjian to say something about the people of Western Sydney having missing teeth and having rat's tails or something like that in order to drum up a bit of media. But these days, as we say, there's so many interesting stories that are actually just self-perpetuating. And for me, I guess it is the Illawarra Hawks. I just the success that they've shown, the fact that these top teams that we're expecting to be so dominant haven't yet found their feet entirely, the likes of Sydney and Melbourne and Perth. And then a team like Adelaide. I mean, haven't they been a story, a complete roller coaster? And we'll talk about them in more detail later on. But they've just been a really interesting must watch, and they're equal parts fun and train wreck and all of the above.
We're going to take a quick break or reset ourselves. And when we come back, we're going to start with our friends in the heartland. Plenty more when we return. It's the roundtable. Julian Marcus, Matt McQuaid with you. Mooka Shirelli is our special guest this week. As always, subscribe to the podcast, Apple, Spotify, all of the others that I can't pronounce. You just go to search bar, go to the search bar, put in the round table. We pop right up. What more could you possibly want other than myself and Matt McQuaid in your lives?
Oh.
I'll leave you with that image. But there is an image that has been just as burned into my mind as well, gentlemen. And this is one that came on Saturday night at John Cain Arena. I was there calling the game on the collective. And as the game came to an end, we saw that horrific final play in a cavalcade of horrific plays from the Phoenix down the stretch. And the team walks off right in front of our commentary position. And I am drawn to the face of Mike Kelly. The man, if you could have seen this face, it would have told you the story. My colleague on the broadcast, Jamie Hamilton, described him in one word, and that was defeated. Although you could have said that about the entirety of the Southeast Melbourne Phoenix as they walked past. But this was a man that just looked beaten, looked out of ideas, and just looked despondent because he knew what was coming. And sure enough, just before 9 a.m. Sunday morning, ESPN's Olgan Ulich puts out the tweet, "The Southeast Melbourne Phoenix have parted ways with head coach Mike Kelly." Sam McKinnon's into the role in an interim basis. The search is going to go worldwide. We heard from the Phoenix on Monday afternoon through Simon Mitchell. There's been a few names already thrown up. Quite interestingly, a couple of former Sydney Kings coaches have been thrown up in there as well. We might as well just rename them the Southeast Melbourne Kings if that happens. But Matt McQuaid, Saturday night, you said that you have some thoughts on the situation regarding the Southeast Melbourne Phoenix. I've been waiting for this, and I know a lot of others have as well. I dare say those thoughts may have changed from Saturday night to now, but I do want you to give a little bit of, if it had things hadn't have changed, I'll start with a question and then let you break it down. But if Mike Kelly was still the coach right now, would you have come on this program today and said he needs to go tonight?
Yeah, because I knew that was, if he had lost, and I think I said this to you off air, that if the Brisbane game, if he'd lost that game, he was gone no matter what. His position would have been completely untenable. Had he stayed, I would have had more than a few thoughts about that. And look, I just want to start by saying that the one thing I have for Mike is enormous sympathy. I said that last week. You know, he is a great guy. I think anybody who's had anything to do with him over the journey, and I've had a little bit to do with him, you know, when he's been a coach or an assistant coach or even a player going way back, would all say the same thing, that this is a quality individual and a quality human being. right? So the first thing, I guess, when this type of thing happens, you always have to have sympathy for the individual. You have to have care for the individual. That's number one. Number two is it should have happened a lot sooner. And in point of fact, Mike should never have been put in this position in the first place. I think it was a case of great loyalty, which is a good thing, by Simon Mitchell and Tommy Greer to someone they respect immensely as a person. But I think when you looked at his overall record coming into this season, and with the one exception of that coach of the year season that he had with the Cairns Taipans, he's been a losing head coach throughout. And, you know, his final record, I think, finishes up something along the lines of 41 and 60 odd, whatever it is. Yeah, I mean, as a head coach. So, yeah, like 41 and 80 odd or whatever it ended up being. But with South East Melbourne, he finished at 10 and 23. So, yeah, I mean, I know there was the built-in excuse from the previous season about the injuries and, you know, giving him an opportunity to with a brand new roster with a lot of talent that they brought in. But the reality was, you know, and I've said this before as well, Mike as a player was outstanding, great, you know, teammate, great role player, defensive player, tough guy, hard-nosed, all of the above. As an assistant coach, he was brilliant, absolutely brilliant, you know, tremendously engaging with the players who all relied on him, you know, who he was a guy they could go to if they were, you know, maybe a little bit intimidated by a Dean Vickerman or whoever it might have been. He was so highly regarded in that way. But I've said it a million times, just because you're a great assistant coach doesn't mean you're going to make a great head coach. It's just some people in this life are not meant to be head coaches, at least at NBL level. It takes a special personality to do it because you're dealing with, you know, a whole bunch of different personalities as a starting point. You know, you have to be this great man manager. As an assistant, you know, you don't, the expectation's not on you really. You're kind of in the background. You're not front and center. You know, you're not a guy that has to stand up in front of the media and take questions. You're not a guy that has to suffer criticism, even when the team's losing. No one criticizes the assistants. Everyone goes straight to the head coach, which is unfair because it's a team thing, right? But it's, you know, it is the way of the world. So I just never thought Mike was really cut out for it, at least in again, at NBL level. I did say last week, maybe from a college perspective, because it's a different kind of dynamic and paradigm that you're looking at there. But he wasn't the right guy for the job, clearly. And, you know, you talked about Simon Mitchell and Tommy Greer, you know, having their press conference. And the fact that Simon more than once was saying, no, I believe in this roster. I believe in this roster. And, you know, that tells me that they essentially just didn't think anymore that Mike could get what they expected he should get from the roster. Now, there's plenty of arguments to be made about, you know, the playing group and how this whole thing has been put together. And I have said there's enormous talent on this team. But from Mike's perspective, yeah, he was never the guy to get that talent going. You know, bring in Nathan Sobey, and I think, you know, Nathan Sobey's got a bit to answer for, quite frankly. I don't think he's helped Mike out at all. He's not been good so far. Obviously, he got benched, which was against Brisbane, which, you know, I did say that they'd probably try and change things, and that would be one of the things. But, you know, one of seven from the field, it just didn't work. You know, Nathan against his old club. There's bigger problems than just Mike Kelly as well in that organization. And for me, when a coach is dismissed, particularly 5 games into a season, even though he's 0-5, they weren't going anywhere. They're looking at least, you know, bottom two, bottom three, if not the wooden spoon. To me, it's an organizational failure. It's across the board. I think Tommy Greer and, look, Simon Mitchell, friend of the program, has been on this program as well. Love the guy to death, and I'm you know, I know Tommy very well, and I've known him for several years, even commentated with him once or twice. But it those are the two guys now. The pressure to me should be on them, because you know they were the ones that gave Mike that team. They were also the ones that signed him. Where most people were saying after a 10-18 season last in NBL 24 that they wouldn't have brought him back. So now you've got Sam McKinnon in there as an interim coach. Sammy, you know, look, again, it's a, he's in an untenable position in some respects. But then, you know, there might be a new coach bump in the throwdown, who knows. But they've what they've got to do is stop – they've got to be ultra serious about this coaching selection this time. It can't be a young guy. It can't be a guy that's been an assistant for a while, because this group, as it's constituted, needs a hard-nosed, you know, take no crap. You do it my way. I'm going to set the standards, and you better follow them. Otherwise, your ass is out the door. And that's the, you know, who am I talking about? Yeah, pretty obvious. There's one pretty obvious one that's out there, who established a culture at the Sydney Kings, you know, which ended up with two championships in his two seasons, and that's Chase Buford. He's the obvious one. If they're not talking to him, they'd be nuts. Will Weaver, similar, but not as probably hard nosed as what Chase is, but still a guy that's all about setting standards. They can't go down that path again where they're just looking at a young guy or an assistant with no experience, or, you know, not that Mike didn't have experience, but he wasn't a winning head coach. I mean, during his time at the NBL. So, and as I said, I think the other thing is the players need to take accountability for what's happened, because look, it just hasn't worked. They've made, I think Joe Wieskamp, they've got, if you're going to make another change, that's the guy I get rid of straight away. I just don't think it works. I think they need someone who's more defensive minded, because, you know, this team is a group has really struggled, right, defensively and offensively for that matter. But defensively is where, you know, they really just struggled to stop anybody. So Wieskamp, you know, he's a turnstile defensively. So is Matt Hurt. But at least Matt Hurt's giving him 20 a game. They've got very little up front. Geordie Hunter's being asked to do way too much. And we know that he's had his issues with fouling. So, you know, he hasn't been as effective, I think, because he's being asked to, you know, he's put in this position where he can't foul out. So maybe he's not as aggressive defensively as we saw with a, you know, a team like the Kings, where, you know, he could afford to use up three or four fouls because he had backup. So anyway, it's a really difficult thing. I hate that it's happened to such a good person in Mike Kelly, but bottom line for me, it's all about the organization now. That begins at the top. That's with Tommy Greer and Simon Mitchell. And for me, the pressure's on them to get this thing right the rest of the way.
Yeah. Well, Matt, I mean, you said a lot of things there that I agree with, which is quite often the case. We do think alike on a lot of these things. But
it's all right. I did tend to go on, but I did.
No, you did. As you said, as you foreshadowed. And look, one angle on this, I think, has the league got a much lower tolerance for losing than what it once did? I mean, I think we're in an era now where we're continually in that sort of potential coach sacking merry-go-round these days. There's no appetite for building and working the way through a season and seeing if things will work out as there once was. We used to have teams where we said, yeah, that team's not going to win this year. That team's going to just flail around and maybe they're building for the future. We know they're going to be a losing team. They're a losing team. But these days, there's a lot more parity in the league. And we've seen, you know, the likes of Tassie build from the ashes to create such success, and teams like Illawarra turn things around and Cairns to be so competitive. And I think everyone thinks, well, we've got a shot at this. There's a pathway to the play-in tournament. So that also-ran mentality is not accepted these days. And I think when you couple that with the 24-hour news cycle that is prevalent in the world in general, but also the amount of NBL media, both NBL-produced and non-NBL-produced media that is out there these days, means that it's constantly in front of us. And anytime we have that 24-hour news cycle, we see it in politics and everything, people get bored of things very quickly and they need a change. And all the teams that are failing, all you need is, it can feel like 48 hours of saying, oh, is Mike Kelly going to be out of a job? That can feel like, oh, they've been talking about this for months. It needs to happen. You know, and there's such little appetite for that flailing around. And as in the past, we might have seen an article once a week and that was all. And so you kind of forget about it and let the team work on things. And so he's been put in a tough position, as you said. And the team, you know, was the team selected with the right personnel? Is it constructed for success? There's a lot of parts thrown together there. And does the blame need to be apportioned to another area, as you said? I wonder what the ownership group thinks. And that's the thing, you know, you've got Romy Chowdhury, but then you've got the likes of John Wall, Al Harrington, Josh Childress, Dante Exum, Zach Randolph. Mm. But this disparate ownership group, and I wonder what the ownership group thinks in all this, and is there that leadership coming through from that side of things? But certainly they would be looking with a fine microscope at Tommy Greer. And I think, you know, he's been a constant throughout this entire Phoenix process, and you have to question, you know, where's the success going to come from? They've had plenty of big name players. They've had the likes of Mitch Creek there for all that time. And you get guys like Big Al Harrington in and plenty of great players. And they're looking for that success to come. And as we say, that appetite is there and the appetite for losing is very short-winded. I think the Chase Buford one, it makes a lot of sense. You know, he's got four of his former players there. So otherwise you'd question it and say, well, Chase Buford has only really worked with one team in Australia and it was a very talented squad. So there's still plenty of question marks about whether he could make it work. So because he doesn't have that history across multiple clubs and he's only done it for a couple of years, but given that he's got four of his former players there, that could make some sense. Defense is certainly needed. You don't see teams win on offense alone, and that's a big failing in the way this team has been constructed, as you said. There just aren't enough defensive-minded players there. Nathan Sobey has copped a lot, but and it's been mentioned many times, but the way he plays is a particular style and it's yet to be proven that it's a winning style. You know, the way he falls to the ground as he makes a play and then the team goes down the other end 5-on-4 and he's passionate. You know, sometimes that involves really having a go at the refs or whatever it may be, but that passion, which I think is well-intentioned, I think it may distract him sometimes too. So, and we can't put it all on him. There's a lot of players on the court there who are all contributing to what has occurred. And I think, as you say, more changes need to be made. I would look at that import change. They definitely need to bring some defensive nuts and bolts in and whether they change rotations for that as well. Because at the moment, it's not a cohesive unit. And we've seen in the Boomers, in all different levels, that you need all the different parts together. You don't just chuck a bunch of offensive players on the court and hope to win that way. And a lot of questions need to be asked.
I'll give you a bird's eye account of what I saw, not just on Saturday, but also in the throwdown as well. But particularly Saturday, it was startling. And I'll start with this because I'll just give an abbreviated version of what I said Sunday on the collective. You take away the human element first when you discuss these matters because nobody wants to see anyone lose their job, especially you know, Mike Kelly, much loved figure in the league. We're all feeling for him at the moment. But you actually mentioned that just a mention ago, Mookie, about is the tolerance for losing lower now in the NBL? Because I actually expected leaving the building on Saturday night, that they were going to kick this can down the road perhaps and wait for Sunday and get blown out by United by 20 points and then there's your jumping off period. Or the other discussion was give him 4 weeks till we get to the FIBA window. It's not like he's getting turfed after a 20-point loss. They lost by a bucket and that was still enough for them to go, nah, you're out, you're gone. See, it doesn't matter. So in that respect, I actually applaud the Phoenix for being ruthless in that aspect because at 0-5, your season's already out of control. Like they're already going to be trying to buck history in the 40-minute era. No teams come from 0-4 to make the playoffs. The Phoenix are 0-5 and they've got Melbourne United on Sunday. Good luck. But they were ruthless in making that decision. So that tells the sponsors, it tells the players, it tells the fans, we're not settling for this. We're not settling for mediocrity. So That's the first point. The second point is, like you said as well, Matt McQuaid, the pressure now gets turned up on the front office. Tommy Greer and Simon Mitchell, it's now their mess. They've got to clean this up. And I actually did refer to this a little bit at the start of the season, but now it really does hone in on them. I have every confidence they will get it done because I think they're two very experienced operators who know what they're doing and will bring them out of this. But it's their mess now. They've got to clean this up. So it'll be interesting to see what paths they take. And the third one is, I don't know where the team that took Melbourne United to double overtime in a preseason game has gone. But they weren't present on Saturday night. They were woeful. Aside from Matt Hurt, who has been the shining light out of this utter train wreck. I mean, Derek Walton Jr. at times seemed like he was lost and frustrated. Angus Glover has been left to sit on the bench, and he looks like he's lost all confidence and is now living out last season again. I don't know why Ben Ayre isn't being used at all. I have no idea how he can't get on the court for any game time. He was a DNP coach's decision. So too was Tom Vodanovich. In a situation like that, get a bit of experience out there on the floor. I love Owen Foxwell, but they're giving him burn ahead of Ben Ayre, and you got Tom Vodanovich not playing games. Well, in Tom Vodanovich's case and Angus Glover, why did you bring them to the club if you're not going to put them out there on the court? And then you come to Nathan Sobey. There was two plays down in the fourth quarter that I thought really summed it up. The first one was he drove to the left corner and chucked up an off-balance three that tickled the underside of the net. It was nowhere near it. Next possession, he tries a cut to the from the 45 to the bucket, loses his balance, loses possession. Brisbane go up by six, ultimately the game-winning play. And then talk about guys who are frustrated and out of sorts. Remember, Matt, Game 3, 2020 Grand Final, Casper Ware chucks up a shot for three and hits the side of the backboard? That was the first thing I thought of when Derek Walton Jr. hit the side of the backboard. Thought, this is not the guy we've seen in Sydney, and I want to know why.
Yeah. Yeah, that was that after timeout play was yeah, it was desperation, and it came to nothing because, you know, and that was probably the ultimate death knell for Mike, because that just showed that, you know, he was just bereft in terms of, you know, calling the right play, making the adjustment. Yeah, he got the ball in the hands of the right guy. But then if that play consisted of just give it to Derek and hope he creates something against what Brad Rosen calls the muscle, which he did, he got swarmed and everybody else was kind of standing around watching. So, yeah, that was the thing for me, I guess, watching that game from afar, is just the lack of spirit in that club, you know, and the lack of confidence. And, you know, as Brisbane sort of worked their way into it after being down early, you could see it was kind of, oh, here we go again. And it's the sign of a beaten down team. And clearly, Mike, you know, he was on borrowed time. I think everyone knows that. There's no doubt about that. And yes, he had to go. I mean, my argument, and it's been made by a couple of other people in the NBL space, is that it never should have come to this. That's my argument about it. It should have been, look, Mike, you know, we need to go in a different direction. You know, we think we're going to build a team that we think is going to challenge for a championship, but, you know, we need to get whatever it is, a certain type of character, or, you know, someone who's got a winning record, or, you know, whatever you might use as a rationale for it. But it's just unfortunate it came to this. And what's really frightening, you know, from the Phoenix standpoint, you know, Simon Mitchell, look, and he said the right things at the press conference in terms of, you know, we believe we've got the guys when, you know, to win. Okay, that's fine. But the issue they've got, and he's also saying that the NBL season, their season's still alive. I don't share his optimism, because if you look at what's ahead, and I've been having a look at, you know, after the throwdown on Sunday coming up, you know, it's you go to New Zealand on the road. Now, who knows what New Zealand team you're going to get, but again, it's a road game. If they're not going to make any changes from an import perspective, you're going with the same people which I think is fraught with danger. Then you've got Illawarra at home. Illawarra is the hottest team in the league, and you know we'll get onto them in a minute. That's no easy step. Then you've got Tasmania on the road in that incredible environment. And you then follow that up. That's on a Friday. Then you follow that up with Perth at home. That's just round seven. So what's that? Three, four games.
Where's the win?
They could be 0-9 quite easily.
Yeah.
And it wouldn't surprise me if they were. You know, I think if you're going to make a coaching change at this point in the season when you're 0-5, it does smack a little bit of desperation. I agree with what Mookie said. I think it is a more sort of, it's a hard line in terms of reality about not letting coaches, you know, build the program. It's all about instant gratification, right? So it's a win now league. There's no doubt about that. That's what it's morphed into. But I just, you know, the way this whole thing's been handled so far, it's this season and the off season. And as I said, on paper, I had very high hopes for this team, but it just hasn't come through. And you know, look, they're gonna have to be competitive against Melbourne, like super competitive. What Melbourne did to Adelaide should have scared the living hell out of that organisation, the Phoenix, because they won't come within 30 points of that team the way they're playing at the moment.
Who's the clear leader on the Phoenix in the playing group? Like, yeah, is there one at the moment?
Who would know?
You wouldn't know. And you've got guys with the potential for that. Obviously, Derek Walton is one. And, you know, Jordan Hunter even plays that sort of role in groups as well. But, you know, you've got a couple of new imports there. There's so many question marks. And obviously, Nathan Sobey lost all his mojo and his, you know, his social status. And it's a peripheral question to that. Do you guys think it was the right call to bring him off the bench against Brisbane?
It's something that our good friend Derek Rucker brought up, and he thought, you know, on the NBL podcast with Jack Everin, he felt it was a mistake. And, you know, in talking to him and, you know, listening to what he had to say, I'm kind of coming around to his thinking, because I mentioned that as something, if they wanted to make changes, serious changes, that would be the one I made.
That was the one to make, right? But was this the time to do it?
The timing is exactly right, Mookie. So it's a great question. I'm probably on board with Ruck's thought on it, because, you know, it wasn't, it sort of took away that motivation clearly, because Nathan's a different person. You know, he's a different character, different type of character, and he has to be managed a different way. Again, in much the same way as the Russell Westbrook has to. I mean, it's, I'm sure he hears it all the time, but it's true. That's who he is. He's got so many of the same characteristics. You know, wildly talented, athletic, great transition, explosive, all that, and yet prone to the most head-scratching decision-making you've ever seen. And
polarizing.
The ultimate, and I know you don't like this person, but Bill Simmons, the irrational confidence guy, that's who he is. That's who he's always been.
Yeah, no, you're exactly right. And the Russell Westbrook one is a perfect analogy that you make. And I think knowing that about him and knowing that all the build-up there's been and all the smackdowns there have been on Nathan Sobey in recent times, and you think, well, all the history with Brisbane and what went on in the off-season, and you think that would have been the one to just see, could he have a good crack of that? Because if he failed in that, then you say, okay, well, he's definitely got to be benched in preparation for the throwdown. But, you know, they didn't take things that way. They didn't at least have a go out shooting with that. So I guess we'll never know.
One last thing about the Phoenix is, give me more Matt Hurt, because I love what he's been doing so far. In a team that hasn't been winning or hasn't been coming close to winning, he was sensational. 24 points, 10 of 15 from the field, got 6 rebounds, a couple of steals as well, and an assist. Just also on the rebounding count, if you're going to give up the nightmare account of 21 offensive rebounds and you get 25 defensive rebounds for yourself, trouble. I mean, Tyrell Harrison got 17 of those boards himself. He got 12 offensive rebounds.
Yeah. Equal the most in the 40-minute era of the NBL.
He was an absolute monster, Tyrell Harrison, on Saturday. Just a quick word about the Bullets. They did everything they could to hand that game to the Phoenix, and the Phoenix found defeat from the jaws of victory. Tyler Harrison started to show us with that performance what he can be, and if we see more of that, then this team can do some things. Saw some nice things out of Casey Prather. A couple of glimpses of the old Casey Prather as well. I really liked the game that Keandre Cook played. I thought he was really solid for his 15 points. And I think James Bateman has saved his job for the moment. 20 points, 7 of 14, shooting, 3 assists. I think he might have given himself a stay of execution.
Yeah, agreed. He played well in that, and you know, it's a temporary stay of execution, I'd say.
Got himself another opportunity to have another opportunity. So yeah. That's it for the Bullets. But a little bit earlier that night, you'd have to say the performance of the weekend by far, and that is Melbourne United inclusive, the Illawarra Hawks. It's not just the margin of victory. I mean, that's impressive enough, but it's the way that they won the game. And then you see the stands as well, 4,885. You're barely fitting another soul inside the sandpit. And this is October, with all due respect, against Tasmania. This isn't Sydney. This isn't even Melbourne. This isn't even the Wildcats. It's the Jack Jumpers. I know they're defending champions, but that is such an impressive attendance for the Illawarra Hawks. And that shows this team and this community are one right now. The Gong, yeah. The South Coast, they have bought in on the Hawks.
Yep. You're right. And for it to happen so early in the season, I think that's the key, right? Because we've seen Illawarra teams, you know, even the two Brian Gorgian teams where, you know, it's a different scenario because obviously we were still at the back end of COVID. So it may be a little unfair to compare those. But I can go back even, you know, to the Brendan Joyce years. They were not getting those sorts of crowds. And even the really successful teams he had, you know, that team that went to the grand final in 2005, for example. So they were getting, you know, reasonable crowds, but nothing like this. And with an excitement level that, I haven't seen from the community, and we've been crying out for this ever since, you know, our good friend Dori Kodahi and sort of, you know, championed the Hawks when they were, they had nothing and they were about, you know, just about dead and buried. But he came back and obviously what, you know, you have to give Jared Novelli, the owner, a lot of credit, you know, for what he's done over the last, you know, 3 to 4 years now. So they've gotten to this point where it's almost like it's serendipity in a way because, you know, who would have thought that Justin Tatum would have been as good as he was. Now, a guy that previous experience was a high school coach, you know, and yet he comes in to a team that was absolutely bereft. They were completely destroyed and, you know, took those same people all the way to the semifinals. Remarkable. Should have won coach of the year. You know, I think a few people would say that, but anyway, this year, they go out and they recruit. They get a Trey Kell. They get a Darius Days to, you know, surround Tyler Harvey, who, by the way, very quietly is having an outstanding season. And, you know, he's playing as well as I've seen him, even in his all-NBL season. He's been sensational. And, you know, I was sort of having a chat to Derek Rucker about this on Sunday. And what he talked about was his patience. And I think it's a great word with Harvey because we've seen him kind of force the issue a bit too much in the past. He knows he doesn't have to. He can just do his thing. He can play off the ball. He can let Trey Kell make decisions, put pressure on the second level of D, kick it out, got that corner three down. If he can up fake, he can throw in that floater and do all of that stuff. So, that's one thing. Then you've got Sam Froehling who's, you know, stepping up yet again and becoming that guy that I think a lot of people expected him to. And then William Dave O'Hickey is making a run at Sixth Man of the Year. That was an extraordinary performance by him against Tasmania. And then what Wani Swakalabulluk did to Milton Doyle was, that was a crime, man. He destroyed him. Now, Milton Doyle is an all-NBL talent. You know, well, there's no two ways about that. And Wani Swakalabulluk just killed him. And Swakalabulluk is a guy that he's a classic 3-and-D guy who's as underrated as they come, who should be, if he's not in the conversation as defensive player of the year, he ought to be, because he's just been, he provides that extra level of oomph defensively for this ball club. So it's great that the community's got behind them. It's something that people have always argued about, but I think there's a sense in Wollongong and in the South Coast region in general that something special is brewing here. And that performance against Tasmania was frightening. And it's one of the best Illawarra Hawks performances I've seen. And then Justin Tatum goes in at the press conference, says we can be 10 times better. Well, if that's the case, that's your championship favorite right there. They probably only go 8 deep, I would say, but it doesn't really matter. I think because the 3 guys they've got coming off the bench are as good as anybody in the league. You know, that's Hyungjun Lee, tremendous shooter. We all have enough, you know, enormous time for Lachlan Olbrich, obviously. And then, as I mentioned, Dave O'Hickey, who's just, you know, an unbelievable energizer bunny who does everything at both ends of the court. And then, you know, that starting five of these is deadly. It really is. So well coached, brilliantly coached. Justin's got this team humming. Who knows? It could be one of those years. They haven't won it since 2001. That's their sole championship. You never know. We've talked about how the 3 teams that, you know, everybody typically talks about, which is Sydney, Melbourne, Perth, for one reason or other haven't, you know, exploded, although, you know, the game on Sunday notwithstanding for Melbourne, but they haven't kind of really established themselves yet. But this Illawarra team is putting themselves out there and saying, hey, look at us. And if you're going to, you know, challenge for a championship, you're going to have to come through us at some stage. What a great story it is for that region.
That aura that Justin Tatum has around himself and brings to the club is almost unmatched. I mean, obviously Scott Roth has created that in Tasmania, and everyone's kind of been waiting the last couple of years as to when that was going to wear off. And perhaps in games like this or at the start of the season when he's come out with his awkward interviews where people start to question Scott Roth for the first time. But Justin Tatum has just brought that aura to the club. And there aren't many others that have that. Obviously, Brian Gorgian has that aura that he brings. But then you'd argue that, you know, maybe Adam Ford is another one who is a real persona around his team. But, you know, you've got great coaches like Dean Bickerman or John Reilly, or other coaches who they're amazing coaches and they're known to be great coaches, but they don't bring that aura to a club in that same way. And Justin Tatum seems to have brought everyone along with this swagger and this belief, and that was switched on overnight. And I'd like to see who the people were. I certainly didn't know much about him. I'd like to see who the people were at the start who said that he was going to be as amazing as what he is, because obviously he didn't come with much in the way of receipts to his previous success coming from the background that he did as a high school coach. So this has been phenomenal. And that club, as you say, they've just come together nicely. And Tyler Harvey just plays with so little pressure because he has a structure around him. It's not that same urgency that he had to have to try and create things. Now that he's got somewhere with that composure of Trey Kell, and you look at Trey Kell, I mean, hasn't had that success with the other clubs that he's been at. And what is it? What's the difference? Is it that belief, or is it the structure? What is it? Samson Froehlich, as we said, he's just playing phenomenally. And that matchup with Will Magnay was such an anticipated big one. And, you know, for Will Magnay to come out of that with 0 blocks and to have occasions where Sam Froehlich was just blowing by him and really playing at that superior level to put up 21 points against such a top-level defensive centre. They've got a great squad. They are very deep. I mean, you mentioned those top 8, but of course, you've got the likes of Mason Peatling and Todd Blanchfield sitting down the bottom of the bench there, who can come in and provide decent minutes and experience and toughness and all those things. And even, you know, I mean, Dan Greta is rarely used, but he's also can be useful. So it's good to see the gong firing. You know, we've you more than anyone have spent a lot of time there at games, and the atmosphere there is great when it is going, and we've also seen times where it's very quiet. So wonderful to see. And if we're asking the question, are they the favourites? Certainly, if you're going to start the playoffs tomorrow, start the finals tomorrow, I'd say they are certainly the most cohesive and well-structured and powerful team right now. I don't know that that's going to continue to the end of the season, because I think the likes of Melbourne and Sydney will get themselves better together than what they are at the moment. And I don't doubt that Illawarra will be there, but they're right now, they are the top team, I think.
Yeah, I think they have to be, although you wouldn't know it with the bookmakers. Sydney, $3.10 at the moment in most markets. Sydney, $5.50. Illawarra, $6.50. So they're closing, but they're the number one seed for a reason. And I know that New Zealand are top of the standings, but let's be honest, that's fool's gold. So Illawarra, deservedly in provisional P1 at the moment. Position two, Melbourne United, equal on record with the Sydney Kings, but geez, that beatdown of Adelaide yesterday. They went in against a team that had won three in a row, had a moment that the club needed so badly on Friday night with that win over the Kings. That was their statement night. That was their flag in the ground moment. Matt McQuaid, they just took them apart, especially after halftime. I mean, they gave up 29 points, Melbourne United, in the first quarter, and you thought, okay, the Sixers are on here. But then they respond by holding them to 8 in the third quarter, and they put them away with an absolute tear.
Yeah, they showcased their strength, didn't they? Which was what I kind of flagged last week I thought might happen, which was Adelaide coming off what was going to be a very, very tough game against the Kings, going into that environment was going to be a sellout or near sellout against a team that was, quite frankly, embarrassed, the week before. And I don't mean, from a general sense, I just mean their own sense. They would have been embarrassed to lose in that fashion on their own home floor. So they figured to come out with just incredible motivation. There's no doubt about that. And they, I did flag that I just believe their physicality and their defensive intent was just going to overpower Adelaide in the end. And that's exactly what happened. I mean, you mentioned the 8 points in the third quarter, 19 in the fourth. Obviously, the game was well gone by that stage, but they had that offensive explosion that we've sort of been waiting for in that second quarter that really sort of set that tone at that end of the floor. And then you kind of look at what they did, and they did it in a highly efficient manner, 53% from the field. It was just super impressive. And what was it? Six guys in double figure scoring. You couldn't be more impressed with them. And again, that's a team with championship aspirations. There's no doubt. They haven't quite got there yet on a consistent level early. And I know that's something that Dino will be, in Vickerman that is, will want to focus in on as they move through the season. But yeah, who's kidding anybody about their championship, credentials? This team—it's they are impressive. I'm still not 100% convinced about that front line, but I tell you what, they almost changed my mind. What Rob Lowe and Marcus Lee did—that's exactly what Dean Vickerman and the rest of the hierarchy would have envisaged when they brought the pair of them over to United. Lowe was great, 16-6, shot the ball well. And again, Marcus was the same, 13-5, couple of assists, three block shots. We know what a great rim protector he is. And look, how many? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. I mean, 11 guys on the score sheet. That's pretty impressive. And then, what Shea Illy and Dellavedova, platooning on Dejan Vasiljevic and Kendrick Davis, they made a mess of them, and particularly, Davis had 17, but he shot 4 of 11 from the field, and what he did was get to the free throw line. That's, 9 of 13 from the charity stripe, but then Dejan was just hounded into that 3 of 12 performance, 8 points. So Melbourne's defense completely on point. Love the energy, love the intent, They made a bit of a statement. It's only early, but they kind of put their hand up and said, everyone's talking about Sydney and they're talking about Perth and Bryce and what he does and, Illawarra. And then the week before it was Cairns and they were kind of the new darlings, and you know, and then Tasmania got that great win at home, and they kind of put their hand up and said, "Hey, don't forget about us. You know, we have won a couple of these things, and we do feature, you know, a couple of NBA champions for starters, and you know, a guy who was a captain of Duke University, and one of the great defensive guards that we've ever seen, and I mean, just going down the line, a great rim protector. So yeah, that was impressive, and I kind of felt was just a little reminder of what this team's all about.
The question for me is, what are we going to see of Chris Golding this season? We should never doubt the guy, but obviously he's been a bit quieter than normal, and I wonder when those big explosions are going to come, or whether he's sitting back into a quieter role. I mean, they've got that big guard rotation there whilst everyone stays healthy, touch wood. So do they need Ian Clark to explode on a more regular basis? It'll be interesting to see. I mean, I don't believe in the, you know, we talk about, you know, guys getting older and years getting older, but what is he, 36? And I think he's still an amazing shooter and has that amazing self-belief, and he's going to keep on having big games. But will he be that little step back? I think he's averaging about 14 points so far this season. So they haven't pulled it all together yet. I think they're still working things out. We know that Jack White, obviously, he's a different player, and he's, despite the name, despite all of the success he's had, he's not the scorer that maybe a lot of people expect him to be, or at least the creator.
No.
So and I think a lot of people maybe fall for the fool's gold of the name. He does so many things so well, but he's not going to be the guy who you just chuck the ball to and create something for us. So they really need that to come from their guards. And without having a key pivot in there, Joel Oluchulu, et cetera. But that said, I mean, I think a lot of people underestimate Low. I think he's a great IQ player. He makes some great passes and reads and spacing, and he spaces the floor with his outside shooting. And you've got such different players between him and Lee that you can pivot between, which makes things interesting. But I think the difference that you're going to see with that is it's just the inconsistency. You'll see some great games from them where they really make an impact, and then we've seen other games where they're almost non-factors. So that's the thing that Melbourne will struggle with that interior presence. But I, as you say, the brilliance of Dean Vickerman, the veterans they've got there, and that ability to shut down guards, which is some of the best players across the league, are those amazing scoring guards. Melbourne have got the horses to shut those guys down. So come the end of the season, they're going to be scary.
Just with a quick speed round here on an old segment that we had on the program a while back, but it's worth bringing back. Buy, hold, or sell? I'm going to start with you, Mookie, on Adelaide. After the split on the weekend, are we buying, are we holding, or selling with them?
Oh, I'm going to hold. I'm just unsure. I'd like to see how Jarrell Martin integrates into this mix now that there's talk of retaining the two of he and Harrell together. I'm still wondering whether Montrezl Harrell is going to get sorry, I know there's meant to be a speed round. Montrezl Harrell is going to get found out a little bit as people start to work out his game a bit more. He's not maybe not contributing all of the defense in all of the games that he should be. So I just wonder, is a bit of the shine and the excitement and the wow factor going to drop off from Adelaide?
Holding with a potential for buying. You know, I think they've won three of their last four. They've, you know, their win against the Kings was full of merit, albeit I think you do have to say that Xavier Cooks was not Xavier Cooks. He was as crook as a dog with the flu. And not that the Kings used it as an excuse, but he was. And then obviously, you know, Jalen Adams with the back complaint that meant that he missed out on the game against the Taipans on Sunday. I think Mike Wells is doing a terrific job. I'm very impressed with him so far. It's his first gig as a head coach. He's had an incredible career as an assistant, but so far so good as far as he's concerned. Starting five is outstanding. I do agree with Mookie. It's going to be interesting to see how Jarrell Martin Montrezl Harrell and Isaac Humphries all coexist, if indeed that happens. That could either be something incredibly special or it could blow up in their face. So keep your eyes peeled on that one.
What about Bryce Cotton? Are you back on him yet, Matt McQuaid?
Well, I told you this. It's quite funny. After we were pretty hard on Bryce, I think, in our last press conference, and a friend of the show and a star of both small and large screens, Dan Ewing, who I'm very close with, and he sent me a message, and a voice message, and it was hilarious. And to paraphrase what he said, he essentially said, "Matthew," and I get Matthew when I'm in trouble. So I knew it was I had something to answer for. He said, "Matthew, leave Bryce Cotton alone. I don't," and he didn't mean that in a look poor Bryce way. He meant it as in, I'm a Kings fan and I don't want to see anybody poke that particular bear. And of course, what happens? He goes nuclear on the Cairns type bands. He gets back to being Bryce Cotton, the ultimate nuclear deterrent. As I've said, he, you know, just starts knocking everything down from the outside where he hasn't hit the broadside of a barn for the last week or so. And you're thinking, oh, here we go again. Bryce is back. And so, yeah, naturally, I got another message saying, see, he's not, I'm not his good books, Mr. Ewing, at the moment for what I said about Bryce. But that he's always played well against them, yeah, over the years. Yeah, he's always really gone off on the tight ends. I think Perth is a whole of won 14 in the last 16, and again, that was a tight ends team that was a bit undermanned, and still, you know, Perth almost handed it to them in the end, as great as Bryce was. But, I in all seriousness, I did say you never write off a champion, and I was not prepared to do that. I did say that, I'd like to see him get a bit more rest, and I think his minutes have actually gone down a little bit so far this season. So if that continues, that's going to be trouble for the rest of the league, because that sort of Bryce Cotton come playoff time, if they do make the playoffs, is someone no one wants to see.
On the other side of this, we're going to give our picks for the weekend ahead. Julie Marcus, Matt McQuaid, and Mooky Shirelli, our special guest this week. All right, so the round 5 picks. Mookie, I'm going to give you the first pick for Thursday night's game. The Brisbane Entertainment Centre, the Bullets or the returning Breakers?
Well, we know the Breakers have struggled through a tough trip over to the US at an inopportune time, given their great record. And you couldn't really ask for a better opportunity to have a soft landing back against Brisbane, even if it is at home. It's going to be a cracker of a match. I feel like, given the form of the Bullets imports finding a bit of themselves right now, I think Brisbane will get by in a close one.
Yeah, I think the motivation for Brisbane has got to be they have to be better at that venue than they were the last time they stepped out onto that Boondall floor against the Sydney Kings. They've got to get this one. I think they get it pretty comfortably. I think New Zealand are going to be pretty, road weary. After that huge NBA trip that they had, obviously really like what Tyrell Harrison did, albeit against the Southeast Melbourne Phoenix. But you mentioned James Bateman. You know, he's got to show that he can be consistent with that. The one guy I really need to see more from is Rocco Zakarski. I know that there's a lot of hype around him, but I've seen a couple of people on social media bring up that name that everyone associates with yours truly, and that's Kai Sotto, in terms of the type of, in terms of the hype that surrounded him and what happened, obviously, ultimately, never got to the NBA, never played in the association. I think Rocco's got a bit of work to do. I really do. I think, I think there's talent there. The length you absolutely love, but he needs to improve. He needs to get better. He might still be drafted in the first round. Who knows? But he's. I think Brisbane need him to make an impact. That said, I think the pair of them and Brisbane's guard play should be just too much for New Zealand.
Yeah, I'm going Brisbane as well, but that's not with any great confidence because it's Brisbane. Tasmania and Sydney on Friday night at the Silver Dome, Matty.
Yeah, interesting. Not at the usual My State Bank Arena. Of course, it'll be an absolute sellout. And of course, the support will be maniacal, as it always is for the Jackies. I'm not sure about Tasmania's roster, and I'm not sold on Craig Sword. I'm just not. I'm not seeing it. They need more out of that position. Now, I know, you know, he's done some good things, don't get me wrong. I mean, there's been times where you kind of look at it and say, yep, you know, he's clearly a defensive stopper, but I think they need more than that. And I'm not sure how he fits. I really don't in this lineup. So, obviously, Will Magne's going to have a big game against the Kings front line. He's very capable of that. They figure to be better. Obviously, they're going to have to be than they were against Illawarra. They were incredibly disappointing. I think Sydney's got too much. I really do. I think, you know, a fully healthy Xavier Cooks now. Brian Goorjian's expecting Jalen Adams back. But we saw, I mean, God, you know, we basically all said that Sean Bruce was washed up. And then what does he do against Cairns? Comes up with the best three-point shooting performance by Sydney King in the history of the franchise, 6-for-6. No one's ever done it before in the 36-year history of the Kings. So remarkable. And then Tyler Robertson, now we see the high IQ, the kid that I think it was about 2 years ago or 2 or 3 years ago led his conference in college in assists. He's super high IQ, just knows how to play the right way. So there's another one to add into the mix. And then, as Brian Goorjian said, you know, Mika Vekona 2.0, or Mika Vekona with, 100 kilos of C4 or something. Le Pepe, who was sensational again and is quickly become that fan favorite that I fully expected. They're not the finished product by any means, the Kings, but I just think they've got too much depth and too much offense in the end for Tasmania. It'll be close, but Kings for mine.
Yeah, I've got the Kings as well. And I think, as you said, with Craig Sword, I think if they had Jack McVay,
it's
a different story.
Yeah, exactly.
But they just need that scoring punch from that import position with McVay's departure. They just can't afford it. And Sydney, you know, on the back of what's happened this past weekend where they learnt the error of their mistakes, I think they will come forward with a lot more force and head into that road trip with a bit of veracity. So I'm expecting the Kings to get this one, but, you know, of course the people of Launceston might say otherwise.
I'm going with the Kings, but the Jack Jumpers are never to be taken lightly. The Breakers and the Wildcats, a great rivalry from the 2010s, renewed at Spark Arena on Saturday.
Well, Kirk Penny won't be there, will he? So I think...
No, he will not.
The Breakers may surprise the Cats here. Just, you know, that obviously we're expecting that they may come get hit on the rear of the head by the Bullets in the lead up to this, and maybe that'll be what they need coming home, getting back after all the travels to feel like they need to get this win. Obviously, Perth, the more talented team. We spoke about the never underestimate the heart of the champion, Bryce Cotton, as Rudy Tomjanovich would say. And they're the favourites, but I just have a feeling New Zealand will get it.
The glaring issue for me is the lack of a matchup for Cotton. That's Parker Jackson Cartwright, Matt Mooney have got no chance. I'm sorry, they don't. And there's no one on that roster. Look, I mean, you could say that about a lot of teams, but there are a few teams that have got some answers for him. We've already seen that early. But coming off that performance, you know, he had that look in his eye again. He loves the bulletin board material. Again, sorry, Dan, I did supply some of it. Yeah, the other guy, I think New Zealand's going to have a hard time dealing with is Christian Doolittle. He's been outstanding. And, yeah, he's rapidly becoming one of my favourite players. Just, I love these guys that are very talented, but they just go about their business without any histrionics, and they do everything on both ends of the floor, and that's what he is. I'm a huge fan of his. And I think, but again, it's with this particular matchup, Oh, I just think it's the Bryce Cotton show for mine. Give me Perth.
Yeah, I agree. Perth to win, Cotton to put on a masterclass. This is the game of the weekend, and it's amazing to be saying this about the Taipans and the Hawks, Matt McQuaid.
Yeah, it's incredible, isn't it? It's who would have believed that? The biggest issue the Taipans have got is that Taron Armstrong won't be playing in all likelihood, and that's what Adam Ford said in the post-game press conference in Sydney today, in Sunday, that is. And that really, you know, just makes it really tough to see Cairns getting over the top of this, you know, this juggernaut, Hawks juggernaut at the moment. That's what they are. I just don't. They've got a problem at the point. You know, Rob Edwards isn't a point guard. He's a 2-3. You know, forget about, like, it was a disappointing performance, but, like, he was in a very unfamiliar position, I think, against the Kings. And I think he forced a lot of stuff. This time, it's just going to be too much. I mean, with Kellen, Harvey, Swakala Bullock will go after Edwards. Pedro Bradshaw was pretty good against the Kings, I thought, but they didn't have a lot of help, and Tanner Groves is likely to be out. So, the third import for the Taipans, Illawarra goes in healthy, and as you said, Mookie, and I was probably a little bit disrespectful to Vinny Chase, Toddy Blanchfield, and himself, and Mason Peatling, because they're quality guys and quality players, and they do offer that extra depth. So, yeah, the reality is, I said earlier, they probably go 8 deep, and that's clearly wrong. They go 10 deep this season. And I just think they're on a roll right now. You just can't go past them.
Yeah, I've got Hawks by 20. I think they will well and truly dominate it. As much as Cairns, we know, are a phenomenal home team at the Cairns Convention Centre.
That's what gives you pause. That's the one thing that gives me pause. But without Armstrong, I mean, this kid's a superstar.
Oh, he's fun to watch.
Superstar. And, you know, I just love these kids that make everybody around them better. That's what he lifts that entire team. Look, Sam Wardenberg's going to cause some problems with his ability to stretch the floor. You know, if you're giving, you know, Sam Froehling that particular assignment, that might be in Kansas' favour. But overall, yeah, really hard to go past the Hawks.
Yeah, and it is a shame. I love watching Taron Armstrong too, and I think we're not Robinson Crusoe there, but it might be an odd comparison, but he reminds me a little in his flash of the early days Will McDowell White when he first played those few games with the Sydney Kings and had that real flair and that unexpectedness and got people by surprise. He's just got that amazing ability, you know, the way he gets to the rack and sets up other people, his IQ and his composure for his age. I just want to see him healthy and out there producing big performances again. And he's been so efficient so far. But, and I guess that is the issue for them, that Rob Edwards, you know, out of position. We saw that against the Kings. Great player. I think he's going to have his inconsistencies when he doesn't have someone setting the table for him because of that. And, yeah, the Hawks will get it by a slew of points, in my opinion.
Throwdown on Sunday. I don't know where this rivalry is at the moment. It's definitely a rivalry, but at the moment...
one-sided.
It's very one-sided.
Yeah, the throw-up. this time.
Right up, Mookie.
Yeah, it's unfortunate timing, isn't it? I mean, I know this is part of the media hype cycle to talk about the throwdown, but this is more of a... You know, one of those sideshow carnival events where everyone's going to be gawking at the Phoenix to see how they react, seeing how all the different players come together. You know, when you see a coaching change, as we saw with Illawarra, as we saw with Adelaide, where suddenly the rotations change dramatically. What does that do? Who comes in? Who starts? Who plays big minutes? Who reacts differently to having a different coach out there? So that'll be worth watching. But you know, Melbourne are going to have a pretty good evening, I think, or afternoon, I should say.
There's always the possibility of the new coach bump, you know, and I've heard this said, and it is true. Sometimes a change of that type can galvanise a team, but, you know, Julian described it perfectly, you know, that, and it's kind of what I saw on the television as well. This is a beaten down team right now. It really is, bereft of confidence. They look like they don't understand their roles for the most part. There was a distinct lack of spirit I saw, even though, you know, they kept it close against a Brisbane team. Look, let's face it, they're not making the playoffs. I mean, I'm sorry. I know it's a big statement. Four rounds in.
Of course, they're not making the playoffs.
But they're not making it. Like they're just.
No.
Like there's just too many better teams ahead of them right now.
I've never understood people say, in the preseason. People were saying, "Oh, the Phoenix look great." I just didn't see it. I had them.
That worried me. Yeah. Apart from that preseason game, but then I suppose the argument. Yeah, Julian called that preseason game brilliantly against Melbourne, but again, it's only a preseason game, and a lot of their
preseason have
got significant time. So that's, you know, you kind of look at that and go, well, heck, you sort of can't use that as kind of a platform for where you believe the Phoenix are going to be. I don't buy the UK as much as I love Sammy McKinnon personally. I don't buy the new coach bump. I think Melbourne too professional. Too experienced. They know that, like, Phoenix will come out hard. I mean, I've got no doubt about that because that's what always happens, particularly after a coach is fired. But in this case, it's only going to last so long. And I think Melbourne behind, Ian Clark, hopefully, Golding's relatively healthy, but Ian Clark, Jack White, Dellavedova, Illy, the Marcus Lee up front, I just think they'll overpower them. This could be one of the biggest margins of any throwdown we've seen. I believe there's just too big of a gulf in everything between these two teams right now.
Yeah, I've got United by 20 as a baseline, and
I'd be surprised if it was less than that. I really and it'd be credit to the Phoenix if it was.
Yeah, I think they'll give them one fierce quarter, and then after that, the glass will just overwhelm them. Final game of the weekend: Adelaide Tasmania. This one at the Adelaide Entertainment Centre.
I feel like this will be the best game of the round, actually. I just think there's, we've seen the explosiveness that Adelaide have. They're must-watch at the moment with all of those personalities on display and the offensive firepower. And we know that the Jack Jumpers can come and perform. Obviously, they're not performing as well as they should, but you should never underestimate a Scott Roth team because he can get lemon juice out of a rock. So let's see. I feel like this is one that's going to come down to a 1 meter walking along the sideline inbounds pass type of finish.
It's a fascinating matchup because if they do lose on Friday to the Kings, and then you're sort of starting to question them a little bit, particularly after that blowout loss to Illawarra. They did beat Perth at home before that, obviously. But, yeah, I really like Adelaide in this one. I really like what they're doing at home. I think they were very, very impressive against the Kings, clearly. They took the Kings' best punch early and really out-toughed them in the end, to the point where – yeah, Brian Georgian's calling out his own team for a lack of hardness after the game. I sort of look at this and I think Will Magne is going to have a huge game against that Humphreys Harrell front line that can do some serious damage. The matchup between Jordan Crawford and Kendrick Davis, you always love those two small guards, explosive scoring guards. Going head to head, that's worth the price of admission. Milton Dahl has to step up. He's got to be better than what he was against the Hawks. And that's stating the bleeding obvious, I know. But I do think Adelaide's, an offensive powerhouse. And I just look at them and think, yeah, they can certainly get the job done in this one. You sort of look at them and they can put a lot of points on the board. They're not. From an offensive standpoint, you kind of look at it and they're second behind Illawarra, who's on an absolute tear as far as offensive rating is concerned. So I think they'll bring that to bear. Look, the Jack Jumpers, you can never write them off. And I do agree with Mookie. I think it'll be relatively close, but I'm not going past Adelaide at home.
Yeah, I think Tasmania with the game against the Kings on Friday, I think they'll throw a massive punch in that one at the Silver Dome. Then you got Adelaide rested on the back of a disappointing display against Melbourne United, where they were beaten in pretty much every area. I think this has all the hallmarks of a 36ers win. I think they'll probably shrug them loose in the final quarter. And Montrezl Harrell, if he gets off the chain like he did the last time he was in that building, look out. That's going to be box office. But Sixers for me to take off the Jack Jumpers. And it's weird. We're talking about the Jack Jumpers and expecting them to win any game this weekend, yet I still don't want to write them off.
No, no. It's just the nature of the schedule, I think, for them at the moment. Yeah, they were pretty much ambushed in Wollongong. There's no two ways about that. And then, you know, coming up against a Kings team that themselves had to bounce back from a disappointing loss and did so in impressive fashion against the Taipans, albeit a depleted Taipans at Qdos Bank Arena. So, it's kind of the way the schedule works that you're going to have these times. And look, at the end of the day, before the season, I probably would have picked them to beat Adelaide. But, you bring in Montrezl Harrell and the Kendrick Davis looks really solid alongside Dejan Vasiljevic. He's having a terrific year, last week's game notwithstanding. But, Adelaide are, I guess it's yeah, I'm impressed by Adelaide at the moment. And I think they could do some damage this season. So that's why I picked them. But again, certainly, don't disrespect to Tassie and Scott Roth and what he's been able to accomplish.
It's going to be another fun weekend of hoops, that's for sure. Mookie, what are you most looking forward to in the next 7 days, NBL-wise?
I actually just want to see how New Zealand bounce back from this trip. A lot has been said about how grueling it's been overseas, and I think it's always interesting to see how a bit of home cooking can change their fortunes. So, yeah, that's the one I want to see.
We already talked about it. I can't wait for the Cairns Illawarra game. I think it's going to be an absolute. I think Illawarra will win, but Cairns, that place will be packed. There's no two ways about that. Cairns Convention Centre, the Orange Army will be out in force, so willing their team on, but it should be a terrific battle. So really looking forward to that. Not looking forward to the throwdown, unfortunately.
No.
And that's usually one of my favourite games on the calendar, because of I love the atmosphere and how John Cain looks and all of that, and the fact they generally get the 10,000 in there, and it's kind of not quite got the same cachet as usual because of the Phoenix struggles.
It's the Multicultural Festival for United on Sunday. They'll be wearing their multicultural jerseys, which is one of the best in the competition. They are expecting a sellout, so it will be a great afternoon, but I don't think it'll be a great afternoon for the men in green. That is for sure. Mookie, where can they find you on the socials, my friend?
Oh, the best one is on X, otherwise known as Twitter, at the Stern Warning.
Absolutely. And we look forward to having you back on the program again later on in the year, my friend. It's always fun to chat hoops with you.
Yeah, fantastic. Thanks for having me. Always a good time and love listening to you guys.
Certainly. Great to have you on the program. It's Mookie Shirelli joining us here on the Roundtable. And Maddie, another big episode coming up next week. And I hope that we can start again on a more positive note, because I liked it last week when we talked about the Taipans for 30 minutes.
Yeah. Well, I mean, imagine if the Phoenix somehow get the W against Melbourne. That'll be topic number one for sure. how much egg on our face we all have for saying that Melbourne's going to blow them out of the gym. So we'll see.
Another big week ahead of NBL action. We'll be back again next week with another edition of the Roundtable. Subscribe to the podcast wherever you get your podcasts. Just search the Roundtable, subscribe so you don't miss an episode. Thanks so much for joining us. We'll see you again next week for another Roundtable.